Back now with the second part of this What Makes It Great with your host, Rob Capello, and a complete performance now by Rob's guest, the Aeolus String Quartet of the String Quartet No. 12 in F Major, Opus 96, The American Quartet by Antonín Dvořák, followed by a Q&A session with Rob and the audience at Merkin Hall at the Kauffman Music Center in Midtown Manhattan, the home of What Makes It Great, from this concert recorded last November. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
String Quartet performing the String Quartet No. 12 in F Major, Opus 96, the American Quartet, composed in 1893 by Antonín Dvořák when the great Czech composer was here in the United States. Returning to the stage with the Aeolus Quartet will be the host of What Makes It Great, Rob Capello, for a Q&A with the audience at Merkin Concert Hall at the Kauffman Music Center in Midtown Manhattan. This concert was recorded there back in November.
Not bad, huh? All right, here's your chance to ask them how they did it. All right, who has a question? Remember, you're live on radio. Question of any kind. Yes, go ahead. Okay.
Your presentation is so well polished and so perfect as if you're reading it from a teleprompter. Can you tell us what is your process for doing this extraordinary delivery?
She said she was so impressed by my polished delivery, she said, as if I'm reading from a teleprompter, and she wanted to know what my process was in preparing this brilliant presentation, I think was the word you said. There is a teleprompter right there. No. Well, the process is it's multi-stages. I mean, in other words, mostly I'm presenting pieces to you that I've known for a long time. So the process is sort of looking into the piece, trying to figure out what it's most about, what is most important to get across to you, and then creating musical examples for all of them that I feel will get across the essence of the piece in those few examples, because obviously we can't cover all of it. So the process is really a long one. First, it's just thinking about the piece, looking at the piece, then trying to create musical examples that I feel will get that piece across to you, and then trying to get these wonderful musicians on two rehearsals to actually get that across to you. Once you sort of have thought about what it is, you sort of know the kind of thing you're gonna say. But no, if you went and we did this tomorrow, it would sound different. I hope. Yes. Great, I love that question. She said that she's gone to concerts of more modern pieces written in the last 20 years. For those on the radio audience, there was a kind of a negative tone in her voice as she said that. And she said that she didn't hear the same kinds of things that were going on in these pieces, and she wanted to know if they were. You know, were people still writing modern things for audiences? And the answer is, of course, me. No. I have a great answer for you, but would you like to take that before I do? But yes, it's a great question, and I'm going to answer that.
It is. I feel like most modern composers whose music we perform are very much using the same tools. Sometimes they're less recognizable in how they're used. I think it's changing in recent years, but there was obviously a trend in the 20th century towards more and more kind of academic style music, in which this is kind of all they were doing. It was taking these kinds of ideas that Rob is talking about to the extreme, to the point where maybe sometimes only the performers are the only people who were able to actually get what was happening. And I think that that's changing actually in recent years, that there's definitely been a move towards more accessibility in composition and more kind of transparency so that you can actually follow some of this stuff, some of the compositional tools that are being...
I'm going to answer that because it's a really good question and hopefully an interesting way. Joseph Campbell, who I've mentioned here in several of these programs, who was a writer on mythology, and he said when he first started studying the world's myths, in the first 20 years of his study, he was astonished at the variety of the world's myths. You know, every culture seemed to have such completely different mythology. If you went to China, you went to... You know, each one was so different. But he said he spent the last 20 years of his career being struck that they were all the same. And that's been my experience in studying music of all different periods. You know, when you first start, you look at something from the 20th century, you look at something from the 16th century, and you're struck by how different they are. But the more closely you look, you more realize that all of them are doing the same things. You know, when you have a musical idea, how many things you can do with a musical idea are very few. For example, what we talked about in Mozart, the exact same things are happening in Dvorak. Did people come to my Appalachian Spring program when we did Aaron Copland? Several years ago, I did several really modern pieces over at Lincoln Center. I did a Golijov piece, I did a John Adams piece, and the same kinds of things. You take a musical idea, you break it down, you combine it in new ways, you change the accompaniment to it, you put it upside down. It's amazing that the same things that were happening in the 1400s and 1500s with musical ideas are happening today, just like in painting. Though the tonal language, the sort of vehicle might sound different, but the number of things you can do with a musical idea really hasn't changed. And I still feel like when I come to a musical idea, I really feel like I'm in the same universe as Bach, and we're looking at what can you do, how can you break it down, how can you repeat it but do it in variety. You know, Stravinsky says that all composition comes down to unity and variety. Too much unity, too much repetition leads to boredom, but too much variety leads to chaos. And I think once you have a musical idea, you know, whether it's today or whether it's 200 years ago, we're all doing the same things. So the vocabulary might sound different, but I think what you do with a musical idea, and you know, once we have real comfort level here that you'll come to anything I do, we'll do a bunch of those pieces that you're frowning at. And yes, Yeah, no. But once I feel like we'll actually fill this hall, if I do a Goliath piece or a Steve Reich piece or a John Adams piece, you will see it's exactly the same. So the truth is people are using the same techniques just in different ways. Just like in literature, you know, the language evolves, but the number of ways you can tell stories are actually very similar. Anyone else? We have a whole group of people here who would like... Yes, back there. Go ahead, sure. You mean what's the experience for them?
Yeah.
Oh, you want to know what's the experience for them in just playing segments as opposed to playing the piece through? In other words, what's horrible about the first half before? Oh, you mean what's it like for them to rehearse these little segments?
As opposed to playing.
Yes, what's it like to rehearse these little segments as opposed to playing through?
We've had the good fortune to do a number of these programs with Rob, and I remember the first one was really like high energy because, I mean, it's always high energy with Rob, but because he moves so quickly, his mind moves so quickly, and these excerpts move really quickly too. So the experience is that you just have to kind of snap between these very different musical characters and sections of the piece. Feels a little bit like teleporting, actually. Because like, you know, in the actual performance of the piece, you start at the beginning of the exposition, and it's a whole emotional journey to get to the development. And then in Rob's presentation, we play the exposition, and then we're right to the development. And it's great because you see the architecture. But it does take a lot of focus and, I think, quick kind of switching back and forth. But we were talking in intermission about how it's kind of nice because it's kind of like a little... like warm up for us to actually play the whole piece, then it feels easy once we've done this.
Also, I think one of the things they did really well is when you have a little short excerpt and it just comes out of the blue like that, to really get into the mood of that excerpt instantaneously and convey it in four measures is quite difficult. And I think they did a really wonderful job in, you know, taking each little one. You know, they're on the Spillville streets and they're dreaming, and then the next moment it's high energy tension. And I thought they went from one to the other really well. Yeah. Maybe one or two more. I know he has a bus to catch.
Can we see that piece of hardware?
Oh, the piece of hardware. Oh, I mean the iPad Pro.
The three of us are all playing on iPads.
Yeah. So that's the big iPad, and all the music is on there. And then they have a foot pedal there that does all the page turning for them. So you don't have to turn pages anymore. However, she is extremely old-fashioned. But actually, for me, what's great about that is I write all my musical examples on computer software, so I can actually just send it to them as a PDF file, and then there's no paper involved at all, and we're saving the earth. Okay. Maybe one or two more. Yes, go ahead, sure.
It feels like there's a very straight line from Dvorak to Broadway musicals. I kept thinking of Jerome Robbins.
Uh-huh. You know, she said she thinks there's a straight line from Dvorak to Broadway musicals. And, you know, that would be excellent because we're doing a Cole Porter program coming up, so I think that would be good. What I think you're feeling is there's a certain popular appeal to this music, and it has a kind of a rhythmic bounce and a melodic, you know, gettability that I do think is similar. But I do think that, you know, it has that same kind of popular appeal that transcends any small world of, quote, elitist classical music. And it just, yeah, has infectious melodic tunes, great mythic life, and it's utterly gettable music. But as I hope you saw tonight, it's very sophisticated. You know, this is as simple as Papa Haydn. One last question and we'll call it a night. Who has a great final question? Yes, go ahead.
Do they memorize the music or do you read it?
Do you memorize the music or do you read it?
We do have the music in front of us, but I like to think that we are playing mostly from memory because of the amount of eye contact that we have to maintain throughout the performance, just to make sure we stay together because it's really hard to do. So both.
Yeah, I think they've almost got it memorized. Yeah. Although I will say when I conduct, I always like to do it from memory because it's sort of a pain to keep looking down at the music. So in January, I won't have any music there. One last question, last one of the night, going once. We're up there. Oh, yes, all the way in the back. Go ahead.
If you play this piece next week, would it sound different or exactly the same?
Oh, I love that last question. His question was, if they play this piece next week, would it sound different or the same?
I guess we'll have to play it next week, and you can come.
I'll say one thing about that. You know, one of the things, because we're so used to hearing music on recordings, I mean, recordings are obviously a fantastic development in the 20th century, but one thing they do is they make permanent something that was never meant to be permanent. In other words, once you have it fixed, it's wonderful, but it can never change. And so we get very used to hearing something over and over again. That's why I never buy recordings. I always say you should buy either no recordings or 50. Otherwise, you get a feeling that this is how the piece goes and it's fixed like that. So I think one of the wonderful things about a live concert is it actually gets back to what this music was written for, which was a one-time only performance. You know, to me, a piece of music or a live performance is like a Tibetan sand painting. You know, you make a Tibetan sand painting and the minute it's done, you destroy it. And that's what it should be, a one-night only performance, and it's made by the performers on stage, it's made by you, the audience, and exists only once. So we'll always be different because they are different, you're different, the hall is different, the mood is different, and the world has changed. And so I guess on that final note, I'd like to thank all of you because tonight's program was not made possible only with them and with you, and only tonight, one night only. So thank you for you, and take one last bow.
Rob Capello with the Aeolus String Quartet from this What Makes It Great recorded at Merkin Concert Hall at the Kauffman Music Center back in November. With all these broadcasts we bring you of What Makes It Great, we wish to thank a few people who make it possible. Of course, Rob Capello, also Lydia Kontos, Executive Director of Kauffman Music Center, Emily Krell, Merkin Concert Hall Producer and Managing Director, Benjamin Young, Technical Manager, and Joan Jastrzebski, Communications Director. Our recording engineer for this program was Kenny Feldman. You can find out what's happening at Merkin Concert Hall and the Kauffman Music Center by going to their website, Kauffman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, kauffmanmusiccenter.org. What Makes It Great is made possible in part through the sponsorship of David and Phyllis, because classical music is essential, and also Dragon Thistle Studio in Solbury, Bucks County, Pennsylvania. The next What Makes It Great broadcast will come your way March 8th, and it will be that Franz Schubert Unfinished Symphony program that Rob spoke about. With the time we have remaining in this broadcast, I thought we'd hear a little music from the last chamber music work that Dvorak composed during his time here in America. It is the Violin Sonatina in G major. We will hear the brother and sister team of Gil Shaham on violin and Orly Shaham on piano. We'll hear the opening movement of this four-movement work. I'm David Ozenberg. What Makes It Great with Rob Capello is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you.